Chapter 3. Orion Rising. Vatnjökull, Iceland. Now. Artemis was jumping between psychoses.
Not real, he shouted at the descending ship. You're nothing but a delusion, my friend.
And from there he hopped straight over into paranoia.
You planned this, he shouted at Holly. Who were your partners? Foley, without doubt. Butler, did you turn my faithful bodyguard against me? Did you burgle his mind and plant your own truths in there?
From the rooftop, the directional mic in Holly's helmet picked up no more than every second word, but it was enough to tell her that Artemis was not the clinical logistician he used to be. If the old Artemis could see the new Artemis, the old Artemis would die of embarrassment. Like Butler, Holly was having a hard time controlling her rebellious sense of humour in this dire hour.
Get down! She called. The ship is real! That's what you want me to think. That ship is nothing more than a cog in your conspiracy!
Artemis paused. If the ship was a cog in the conspiracy, and the conspiracy was real, then the ship must be real.
Five!
He blurted suddenly, having forgotten all about it for a minute.
5, 10, 15!
He pointed all of his fingers at the ship, wiggling them furiously. A 10-finger salute. Surely that will vaporize this vision. And it seemed as though the fingers were having an effect. The four discus-shaped engines, which had been trailing behind the main body like helpless puppies tethered to their spooked master, suddenly flipped and began emitting anti-grav pulses that lolloped towards the ground in fat bubbles, slowing the ship's descent faster than seemed possible for a craft of such inelegant dimensions.
Ha!
Crowed Artemis.
I control my own reality! Did you see that?
Holly knew that, far from controlling anything, Artemis was actually witnessing a fairy probe's landing sequence. She had never actually piloted a deep space probe herself, but nevertheless knew that standing underneath such a behemoth, while it was dropping anti-grav bubbles, was more than enough to get a person killed. And wiggling fingers like a sideshow magician was not going to change that.
I have to get up, she thought,
but the injury in her legs held her down like a lead blanket.
I think my pelvis is broken,
she realized.
Maybe an ankle, too.
Holly's magic had an unusual potency, thanks to a couple of boosts from her friend, the Demon Number One, who was turning out to be the most magical warlock the university had ever enrolled, and it was setting to work on her injuries, but not fast enough. Artemis had a couple of seconds before one of those anti-grav blobs tore him apart, or the ship itself actually landed on his head, and you didn't have to be a genius to figure out what would happen then, which was just as well, as Artemis didn't seem to be a genius any more.
Assistance, she called weakly into her comm set. Someone! Anyone!
There was no one. Anyone who had been inside the shuttle was beyond magic, and Foley was still upended in the snowdrift.
Even if there were somebody, it's too late!
Large crack patterns bloomed in the ice like hammer blows as the anti-grav pulses impacted on the surface. The cracks spread across the glacier with a noise like snapping branches, dropping large sinkholes through to the subterranean caverns below. The ship was as big as a grain silo, and seemed to be fighting against the pull of its tethered engines, throwing off waves of steam and jets of fluid. Rocket fuel drenched Artemis, making it difficult to ignore the fact that the rocket was real. But if there was one thing Artemis had not lost, it was his stubbornness, and so he stood his ground, refusing to yield to his final squeak of good sense.
"Who cares?" he muttered.
Holly somehow heard the last two words and thought,
"I care."
Desperate situations call for desperate solutions.
Nothing to lose, thought Holly, flapping at the holster on her thigh. She swept her pistol from its home in a slightly more erratic arc than usual.
The gun was synced with her visor, but even so, Holly did not have time to check the settings. She simply held down the command sensor with her thumb, then spoke clearly into the microphone at the side of her mouth.
Gun.
Pause for beep.
Non-lethal. Wide-bore concussive.
Sorry, Artemis. She muttered, then fired a good 3-second blast at her human friend. Artemis was ankle-deep in slush and in full rant mode when Holly pulled the trigger. The beam hit him like a slap from a giant electric eel. His body was lifted and tossed through the air a moment before the probe clattered to a bone-crushing landing, obliterating the spot where he had been standing. Artemis dropped into a crater like a sack of kindling and disappeared from Holly's sightline.
That's not good, thought Holly.
Then saw her own magical sparks hover before her eyes like inquisitive amber-tailed fireflies.
Shut down, she realized. My magic, sending me to sleep so that I can heal.
From the corner of her eye, Holly saw a door open in the probe's belly, and a gangplank swing down on hydraulics. Something
was coming out.
"Hope I get to wake up," Holly thought. "I hate the ice, and I don't want to die cold."
Then she closed her eyes and did not feel her limp body roll from the rooftop and thump into a snowdrift below. Barely a minute later, Holly's eyes fluttered open. Waking up felt jagged and unreal, like documentary footage from a war zone. Holly could not remember standing, but suddenly she was on her feet, being dragged along by Foley, who looked extremely dishevelled, possibly because his beautiful quiff had been totally singed and sat balanced on the top of his head like a bird's nest. But mostly, he seemed depressed.
"Come on, Captain!"
Foley shouted, his voice seeming a little out of sync with his mouth.
"We need to move!"
Holly coughed amber sparks, and her eyes watered.
"Amber magic now? I'm getting old."
Foley shook her shoulders.
"Straighten up, Captain! We have work to do!"
The Centaur was using trauma psychology. Holly knew this. She could remember the in-service course in Police Plaza.
"In the event of battle stress, appeal to the soldiers' professionalism. Remind them of their rank repeatedly. Insist that they perform their duty. This will not have a long-term healing effect on any psychological wounds, but it might be enough to get you back to base."
Commander Vinyaya had given that course. Holly tried to pull herself together. Her leg felt brittle from the knees down, and her midsection buzzed from the post-healing pain known as magic burn.
"Is Artemis alive?"
"Dunno," said Foley brusquely. "I built those things, you know. I designed them."
"What things?"
Foley dragged her to a glassy droop in the glacier, slicker than any ice rink.
"The things hunting us right now. The Amorphobots. The things that came out of the probe."
They slid to the bottom of the bank, leaning forward to keep their balance. Holly seemed to have developed tunnel vision, though her visor was panoramic. The edges of her vision crackled with amber static.
"I'm still healing. I shouldn't be moving. God knows what damage I will do to myself."
Foley seemed to read her mind, but more likely it was fairy empathy.
"I had to get you out of there. One of my Amorphobots was heading your way, sucking up everything in its path. The probe's gone below, to God's know where. Try to lean on me."
Holly nodded, then coughed again. The spray was instantly absorbed by her porous visor. They hobbled across the ice towards the crater where Artemis lay. He was extremely pale, and there was a speed drip of blood running from the corner of his mouth to his hairline. Foley dropped his forelegs and tried to encourage Artemis back into consciousness with a stiff talking to.
"Come on, mud boy," he said, poking Artemis's forearm. "No time for lollygagging."
Artemis's response to this chastising was a barely noticeable jerking of his arm. This was good. At least it told Holly that Artemis was still alive. Holly tripped over the crater's lip and stumbled to the bottom.
"Lollygagging?"
she gasped.
"Is that even a word?"
Foley poked Artemis one more time.
"Yes, it is. And shouldn't you be killing those robots with your pencil?"
Holly's eyes seemed to light up.
"Really? Can I do that?"
Foley snorted.
"Certainly, if your pencil has a super-duper demon magic beam inside it instead of graphite."
Holly was still groggy, but even through a fugue of injury and battle stress, it was obvious that the situation was dire. They heard strange metallic clicks and animalistic whoops chittering through the air, softly at first, then rising in tempo and intensity to a frenzy. The noise grated against Holly's forehead as though her skin was being yanked.
"What is that?"
"The Amorphobots are communicating," whispered Foley. "Transferring terabytes of information wirelessly, updating each other. What one knows, they all know."
Holly scanned Artemis's vitals through her visor. The glowing readouts informed her that he had a slight heart murmur, and there was some unusual brain activity in the parietal lobe. Other than that, the best thing her helmet computer could conclude about Artemis was that he was basically not dead. If she could survive this latest misadventure, maybe Artemis would too.
"What are they looking for, Foley?"
"What are they looking for?"
repeated the Centaur, smiling that particular hysterical smile that exposed too much gum. Holly suddenly felt her senses snap into focus and knew that the magic had finished its overhaul of her injuries. Her pelvis still throbbed, and probably would for a few months, but she was operational again, so maybe she could lead them back to fairy civilization.
"Foley, pull yourself together. We need to know what those things can do."
The Centaur seemed put out that someone would choose this particular moment to ask him questions when he had so many vital issues to consider.
"Holly, really? Do we have time for explanations now? Snap out of it, Foley! Information, hand it over!"
Foley sighed, lips flapping.
"They're biospheres. Amorphobots. Dumb plasma-based machines. They collect samples of plant life and analyze them in their plasma. Simple as that. Harmless."
"Harmless?"
blurted Holly.
I think someone has reprogrammed your amorphobots, Centaur.
The blood disappeared from Foley's cheeks, and his fingers twitched.
Nah, not possible. That probe is supposed to be on its way to Mars to search for microorganisms.
I think we can be pretty sure that your probe has been hijacked.
There is another possibility, suggested Foley. I could be dreaming all of this.
Holly pressed on with her questions.
How do we stop them, Foley?
It was impossible to miss the fear that flickered across Foley's face, like a sun flash across a lake.
Stop them? The amorphobots are built to withstand prolonged exposure to open space. You could drop one of these onto the surface of a star, and it would survive for long enough to transmit some information back to its mother probe. Obviously, I have a kill code, but I suspect that has been overridden.
There must be a way.
Can't we shoot them?
Absolutely not. They love energy. It feeds their cells. If you shoot them, they'll just get bigger and more powerful.
Holly laid a palm on Artemis's forehead, checking his temperature.
I wish you would wake up, she thought. We could really use one of your brilliant schemes right now.
Foley, she said urgently, what are the amorphobots doing right now? What are they looking for?
Life,
replied Foley simply.
They're doing a grid search now, starting at the drop site and moving out. Any life forms they encounter will be absorbed into the sac, analysed, then released.
Holly peeped over the lip of the crater.
What are their scan criteria?
Thermal is the default, but they can use anything.
Thermal, thought Holly. Heat signatures. That's where they're spending so much time by the flaming shuttle.
The amorphobots were arranged on corners of invisible grid squares, slowly working their way outwards from the shuttle's smoking carcass. They seemed innocuous enough, rolling balls of gel with twin glowing red sensors at their cores, like slime balloons from a children's party, maybe the size of a crunch ball.
They couldn't be all that dangerous, surely. Dozy little blebbers.
Her opinion altered sharply when one of the amorphobots changed colour from translucent green to angry electric blue, and the colour spread to the others. Their eerie chittering became a constant shrill whine.
They have found something, Holly realised.
The entire squad of 20 or so bots converged on a single spot, some merging so that they formed larger blobs, which flowed across the ice with a speed and grace heretofore concealed. The bot that had flashed the message to the others allowed a charge to crackle across its skin, which it then discharged into a hillock of snow. An unfortunate snow fox leaped from the steam, tail smoking like a fuse, and made a dart for freedom.
It's almost comical.
Almost. The amorphobots jiggled, as though laughing, and sent a few bolts of crackling blue energy after the doomed fox, carving black rents in the ground, steering the terror-stricken mammal away from the shelter of the great skua. In spite of its natural speed and agility, the bots anticipated its movements with incredible accuracy, sending the animal running in circles, its eyes rolling, tongue dangling. There was only one possible conclusion to this game of cat and mouse. The largest amalgabot droned an impatient base command through the almost invisible gel speakers in its body and turned abruptly to continue its search. The others followed, leaving the original bot to hunt the fox. It quickly tired of the sport and nailed the fox in mid-jump with a bolt of power cast like a spear from its midsection.
Murderer,
thought Holly, more angry than horrified.
Foley didn't design this.
Foley suddenly moved in front of her.
You've got that look in your eyes, Captain.
What look?
The one Julius Root always talked about. The I'm about to do something incredibly stupid look.
There was no time for debate.
I need to get to Artemis's crate.
You can't go. What does the NEP manual suggest in these kind of situations?
Holly ground her teeth. Her two geniuses were useless. She would have to do this herself.
The manual, which you helped to write, would advise me to retreat to a safe distance and construct a bivouac. But, with respect, those guidelines are a pile of troll weevils.
Wow. Nice respect. Do you know what the word respect actually means? I'm no book professor, but I'm pretty sure comparing my manual to a steaming pile of troll weevils does not constitute respect.
I never said steaming, said Holly,
then decided that time was short and she could apologise later.
Listen, Foley, I don't have a downlink to Police Plaza. There are murdering blobby robots on our trail, and the only people who might be able to come up with a solution are either fast asleep dreaming or, in your case, wide awake dreaming. So I need you to cover me while I make a run for Artemis's crate. Do you think you can do that?
Holly handed the Centaur her backup weapon. Foley held the gun gingerly, as though it were radioactive, which, to a certain degree, it was.
Okay, I know how this thing works, in theory.
Good, said Holly, and slithered on her belly, up and onto the ice field, before she could change her mind.
Holly felt her torso numb and stiffen as she slid across the glacier. The ice stretched in front of her, carved by the prevailing wind into elegant swoops and whirls. A wind which was to her rear, making progress relatively easy considering she had until recently been suffering from several broken bones. Saved by magic once more. But now she had not a spark left in her. The fox's carcass lay smoking on a bed of snow, melting a grave for itself. Holly tore her gaze from the pathetic mammal's eyes, still rolled back in its blackened head, and looked instead at Artemis's crate, which stood, disregarded by the bots, but past their search line. I need to breach the line unnoticed. Their default sensor is heat. I'll give them a little heat to think about. Holly switched on the air conditioning in her suit, which had about 5 minutes left in it according to her visor readout, then selected the flare package on her neutrino handgun. She also accidentally activated the tunes player in her helmet with a series of shivery winks. Luckily the volume was muted, and she managed to switch off Grayson McTortor's metal epic Troll Sundown before the Amorphobots detected the vibration. Grayson McTortor's music never killed anyone before. He'd probably be thrilled. Holly flipped onto her back, looking up at a sky of pitch and granite, the bowed cloud bellies licked by flame. Heat! Holly steadied her hand and removed the detachable trigger finger section of her glove. She pointed her weapon skywards and sent a wide-arced spray of flares into the night. Flares! If only someone could see them and come to help! The Amorphobots relaxed chittering, amped up to a whine, and she realized that it was time to move. Holly was up on her feet and running before her good sense had time to kick in. She raced full pelt for Artemis's crate, taking a straight attack as possible, weapon held along her sightline. I don't care what Foley says. If one of those red-eyed monsters comes anywhere near me, I'm going to find out what a plasma grenade does to its innards. The bots had, without exception, pointed their sensors towards the descending flares, which fizzled like the splutterings of an oxyacetylene torch cutting through the clouds. The Amorphobots' malleable bodies sprouted gel periscopes, and they stood, following the flare's progress like ill-defined meerkats. They may have noticed an inconsistent heat source jiggling across the glacier, but they were programmed to prioritize. Not so smart after all. Holly ran as fast as her brittle bones would carry her. The terrain was flat, but treacherous. The light September snow had dusted the grooves, and Holly almost lost her footing in a tractor trail. Her ankle grated, but did not crack. Lucky. Lucky little elf sat on the shelf, and the silly human boy mistook her for a toy. A nursery rhyme used to teach children to sit still if they saw a human. Think like a little tree, and that's what the mudmen will see. I'm a tree, thought Holly, without much conviction. A little tree. So far, so good. The bots were glued to the flares and were showing no interest in her heat signature. She skirted the wreckage of the shuttle, trying not to hear the groan of the chassis or notice the front panel of a flight suit melded with the windscreen. Beyond the shuttle lay Artemis's great experiment, an oversized refrigerator cannon. Great. More ice. Holly knelt at the base of what Artemis had called his ice cube and quickly located the control panel, which luckily had an omni-sensor, so it was a simple matter to sync it with her own helmet. Now the refrigerator cannon would fire when she wanted, and at whatever target she chose. She set a timer running, and set herself running, seconds afterwards, straight back the way she had come. It occurred to her that the flares were lasting well, and she really should congratulate Foley on the new models, at which point they inevitably began to wink out. With no more pretty lights in the sky, the Amorphobots returned to their methodical searching of the site for signs of life. One was dispatched to check the erratic blob of heat crossing their grid. It rolled across the surface, scanning the ground as it went, sending out gel tendrils to scoop up debris, and even whipping out a tongue like a bullfrog's to snag a low-flying black-headed gull. If there had been a soundtrack to its movements, it would have been tum-de-dum-de-dum. Business as usual, no worries. Then its vector crossed Holly's, and they virtually collided. The bot's scanner eyes flashed, and lightning bolts jittered inside its globulous body. All I need is a few seconds, thought Holly, and blasted the bot with a narrow beam right in its gut. The beam sliced through the center of the blobby body, but was diffused before reaching the hardware nerve center at the core. The bot bounced backwards like a kicked ball, whining as it did so, updating its friends. Holly did not slow down to see what the response might be. She did not need to. Her keen elfin hearing gave her all the information she needed. They were coming for her. They were all coming. Their semi-solid forms pummeled the ice as they moved like quick bongo rolls, along with that dreadful chittering. A bot in her path skittered to one side, a temporary neutrino hole drilled in its top quadrant. Apparently, Foley was taking his job as cover provider seriously, even though he knew his weapon would not kill these things.
Thanks, Mr. Consultant.
The bots were converging on her now, trundling from all sides, burping and squeaking as they came, like kiddie cartoon characters. Which did not stop Holly from blasting as many of the cute critters as she could. She vaguely heard Foley shouting at her to kindly only shoot when necessary, or, to quote him verbatim,
"Holly, in the name of all the gods, stop shooting energy into all energy beings! Just how stupid are you?"
The bots quivered and meshed, growing larger and more aggressive.
"Darf it!"
huffed Holly, her breath coming hard now. Her helmet informed her cheerily that her heart rate was over 240 BPM, which would be fine for a sprite, but not for an elf. Normally, a flat-out sprint would not inconvenience Holly, nor indeed any fairy who had passed the LEP physical, but this was a desperate dash, immediately after a major healing. She should be in hospital, sipping rejuvenation sludge through a straw.
2 minutes to cardiac arrest, said her helmet breezily. Ceasing all physical activity would be a really great idea.
Holly spared a nanosecond to despise the voice of her helmet. Corporal Frond, the glamorous face of the LEP, all blonde hair and tight jumpsuits, who'd recently had her bloodline traced back to Frond, the Elfin King, and now insisted on referring to herself as Princess. Foley emerged from the crater and grabbed his friend's elbow.
"Come on, Holly! We have seconds of life left before those critters that you led right to our hidey-hole kill us all like rodents!"
Holly ran as fast as she could, bones creaking.
"I have a plan!"
They stumbled over the frozen glacier, back to the depression where Artemis Fowl lay unconscious. The Amorphobots flowed after them like marbles rolling down the side of a bowl. Foley dived into the hole. It was not elegant. Centaurs do not make good divers, which is why they do not compete in pool events.
"Whatever your idea was, it's not working!"
he cried. Holly dived into the depression, covering Artemis as well as she could.
"Put your face in the ice," she ordered, "and hold your breath!"
Foley ignored her, his attention attracted by Artemis's ice cube, which was swiveling on its base.
"It seems as though Artemis's cannon is about to fire," he said.
His scientific interest piqued, in spite of the horrible death approaching them. Holly grabbed the centaur's mane, roughly dragging him to the ground.
"Face down, hold breath! How hard is that?"
"Oh," said Foley,
"I see."
There must have been a build-up of heat somewhere, because the bots froze for a moment, exchanging curious chitters. The noise was quickly drowned out by a bass-heavy thump, followed by a descending whistle.
"Ooh!"
chorused the Amorphobots, sprouting gel periscopes. Foley closed one eye and cocked his ear.
"Mortar,"
he proclaimed. And then as the whistling grew louder, he decided that it might be a good idea to take a breath and cover as many orifices as possible.
"This is really gonna hurt,"
he thought, and for some reason giggled like a 4-year-old pixette. Then the entire indent was submerged in a pancake of densely packed nanowafers that worked into every crack, coating the occupants of the hole and completely obliterating any heat signatures. The Amorphobots jiggled backwards, away from the mystery substance, searched around for the beings they had been pursuing, and then shrugged their blobby shoulders and trundled after their mothership, which had bludgeoned and melted its way through the surface to the subterranean volcanoes below. Underneath the gunky quagmire, two fairies and one human lay still, blowing bubbles with their breath.
"It worked!" gasped Holly finally. "Shut your face!"
snapped Foley. Holly pulled his head free from the goo strings.
"What did you say to me?" "Don't take it personally," said Foley. "I just felt like being rude to someone. Do you have any idea what it's going to be like getting this stuff out of my mane? Cabaline will shave me for sure."
"Save you?"
"Shave me! What are you, deaf?" "No, my ears are clogged with stuff."
Holly flip-flopped herself and Artemis from the indent, using her glove sensor to check the human's vitals. Still alive. She tilted his head back to make sure the airway was clear.
"Come back to us, Artemis, we need you."
The Amorphobots had gone, and the only signs that they had ever been on the Van Nierkel Glacier were the grooves in the ice and snow that marked their passage. The air was blessedly chitter-free, though maybe a little chittering would have distracted from the crackle of still-burning troop shuttle. Holly separated from Artemis with a noise like a very big band-aid being slowly pulled from a weeping wound.
"What a disaster,"
she thought.
the weight of her coated helmet causing her head to droop. What a total catastrophe!
Holly looked around, trying to make some kind of assessment of the situation. Commander Vinyaya was gone, along with the military. An LEP Martian probe had been hijacked by forces unknown, and seemed to be heading into the Earth's crust. The probe was blocking their link to Haven, and it was only a matter of time before humans came to investigate all the flares and explosions, and she had no magic left to shield herself.
"Come on, Artemis," she said, desperation creeping into her voice. "We're in deeper trouble than ever before. Come on! You love this kind of impossible problem. I'm sorry I shot you."
Holly tugged off a glove and held her fingers high, inspecting them just in case a spark remained. Nothing. No magic. Perhaps it was just as well. The mind was a delicate instrument, and Artemis's dabblings with the fairy arts had probably triggered his Atlantis complex in the first place. If Artemis wanted to get well, he would have to do it the old-fashioned way, with pills and electroshock. "I already gave him his first shock," thought Holly, swallowing a guilty chuckle. Artemis shifted on the ice, trying to blink under a faceful of sloppy nano-wafers.
"Oh," he moaned. "I can't breathe."
"Wait," said Holly, scooping handfuls of gunk away from his nostrils and mouth. "Let me help." Artemis's own inventions dribbled from the corners of his mouth. There was something different about his eyes. They were the same colours as usual, but softer somehow.
"You're dreaming."
"Artemis," she said, half expecting a typical snappy retort, as in, "Of course it's Artemis, who were you expecting?" But instead he simply said, "Hello." Which was fine, and Holly was happy enough, until he followed it with, "And who might you be?" "Oh, Darvet." Holly tugged off her helmet.
"It's me, Holly."
Artemis smiled in delight.
"Of course. Yes. Artemis thinks about you all the time. It's embarrassing that I didn't recognize you. First time, up close."
Artemis thinks about me, but you don't."
"Oh, yes, I do. Constantly. And may I say you look even more bewitching in the flesh."
Holly felt a feeling of foreboding creep over her, like the shadow of a summer storm cloud.
"So we haven't met before?"
"Not met per se," replied the human youth.
"I have, of course, been aware of you. Seen you from afar, submerged as I was by Artemis's personality. Thank you for releasing me, by the way. I had been making inroads into the host consciousness for some time now, since Artemis developed his little number obsession, but that jolt from your weapon was just the thing to give me the boost I needed."
"It was your weapon, wasn't it?"
"Yes, it was," said Holly, absently. "And you're welcome, I think."
A sudden idea cut through her confusion.
"How many fingers am I holding up?"
The boy did a quick digit check.
4.
"And that doesn't bother you?"
"No. To me, a number's a number. 4 is no more a harbinger of death than any other whole number. Well, fractions, though, they're freakish."
The youth smiled at his own joke. A smile of such simple, saintly goodness that it would have made Artemis wretch. Holly was drawn into the psychosis, and had to ask,
"So, if you're not Artemis Fowl, then who are you?"
The boy extended a dripping hand straight up.
"My name is Orion. I'm so pleased to meet you at last. I am, of course, your servant."
Holly shook the proffered hand, thinking that manners were lovely, but they really needed someone cunning and ruthless right now, and this kid didn't appear to be very cunning.
"That's great, Orion. Really, we're in a bind here, and I can use all the help I can get."
"Excellent," said the boy. "I've been taking stock of the situation from the rear seat, as it were, and I suggest that we retire to a safe distance and construct some form of bivouac."
Holly groaned. Of all the times for Artemis to go AWOL inside his own head. Foley clambered from a morass of nanowafers, using his fingers to draw aside curtains of gunk that obscured his vision.
"Oh, I see Artemis has woken up. Good. We could do with one of his trademark apparently ridiculous but actually ingenious plans."
"Bivouac," said the boy in Artemis Fowl's head. "I suggest a bivouac, and perhaps we could gather kindling for a campfire, and some leaves to make a cushion for the lovely lady."
"Kindling?"
Did Artemis Fowl just use the word kindling? And who's the lovely lady?
The wind picked up suddenly, lifting loose surface snow and sending it skittering across the ice. Holly felt flakes settle on her exposed neck, sending a prickling chill trickling down her spine. Things are bad now, she realized. And they're about to get worse.
Where are you, Butler? Why aren't you here?